This is Dish and Dirt with Gary Pickren, South Carolina's only podcast dedicated to the real estate agent craft. And now, the host of Dish and Dirt, Gary Pickren.
And greetings and welcome back, everyone, to another episode of the best podcast dedicated to the real estate agent craft in South Carolina. I am your often opinionated but rarely, if ever, wrong host, Gary Pickren, coming to you from Blair Cato Pickren Castroline in beautiful downtown Columbia, South Carolina. This is the first week of June 2023, which is also the unofficial start of summer for most of us. So last week, I started a three-part series on financial freedom in real estate. Every one of you are in real estate to make money. This is your business. This is your living. So I want to spend some time discussing how to ensure that you are making money in your real estate practice. So last week, Matt Cavanaugh of the podcast Freedom Chasers, he spoke about how you have all the tools already in your arsenal today to start doing your very own real estate deals that often pay you a greater amount of money than any commission you'll ever earn in any deal. It just takes a mindset change to start investing in yourself. Now, over the next 2 weeks, I'm going to discuss some investing you cannot do, followed with some investing you can do. Then, if our schedules work out, I'm going to add a fourth episode from an incredible guest, her name is Samantha Varner, to discuss profitability in real estate, something that we haven't really addressed on this show before. Understanding that making money and making profit are two entirely different things. Too many people get confused with cash flow and profit. Not the same thing. Need to understand the differences. And this will apply to whether you are only earning commissions or whether you are starting to invest in real estate using your tools and knowledge from your own business. Understanding the difference between profit and understanding the differences between cash flow. So let's go ahead and get started today with our episode on things you cannot do in real estate invest. I'm going to be discussing wholesaling, novations, using power of attorney in wholesaling, and other shady tools that people are using to invest. As a real estate commissioner, I have heard firsthand, mainly at disciplinary hearings, why investors believe that wholesaling is still legal and proper in South Carolina. Conversely, I've also met with a number of you real estate agents out there who regularly report wholesalers to the real estate commission. So today I want to discuss wholesaling so that you can determine if wholesaling and novations are something you should be engaged in as a real estate investor and as a real estate agent, not forgetting certain statutory duties that you may have under the law toward clients and customers. So I'm going to go ahead and spoil the podcast for you by giving you the short answer. And the answer is no, you should not be engaged in wholesaling either as an investor or as a real estate agent. You should not be listing property for wholesalers in South Carolina as a real estate commission, as we will discuss as we go through this today, how the real estate commission believes that you should not be doing so. Not only is this the position of the South Carolina Real Estate Commission, as evidenced by the numerous rulings and cease and desist orders, and by the way, I am not speaking on behalf of the Real Estate Commission today, nor am I binding the Real Estate Commission to anything in this podcast. In fact, I have had to start recusing myself from hearings involving wholesaling because of a project that I'm working on. But I will speak to what is happening in South Carolina at the Real Estate Commission level, as well as what's happening at other states as we go through today. Now, I have attended national conferences where real estate regulators all across this country are discussing the evils of wholesaling. But the interesting thing is that wholesalers are simply ignoring the facts that are clearly in front of their face. And if you do a simple ChatGPT query and ask what states regulate wholesaling, a list of 25 or 26 states will appear that have already taken some action to either outright prohibit wholesaling or to significantly restrict it. We are seeing some states fine wholesalers as much as $20,000 per wholesaling event, and we've seen other states start bringing misdemeanor criminal actions also against wholesalers. Well, here at home in South Carolina, wholesaling has not been declared illegal per se, but the Real Estate Commission has made it virtually impossible to do wholesaling legally. In fact, recently, the Real Estate Commission in South Carolina declared that one must be a licensed real estate agent in order to market or advertise real property that you do not own. Let that sink in for a second. You have to be a real estate licensee, an agent, in order to market or advertise real property you do not own. Is that not what most of the wholesalers are doing? They're marketing property that they do not own. They claim to have an equitable ownership interest in the property by virtue of a contract to purchase the property, but not one South Carolina court has ever recognized this as an equitable interest. So they are continually relying on something that is absolutely false. Additionally, the Real Estate Commission in South Carolina has even said that if you are a real estate agent, you cannot market property unless you have a signed listing agreement with the property owner. And as I just established, a wholesaler is not a property owner, so getting a listing agreement signed by the wholesaler will not satisfy this requirement. You actually have to get the property owner to sign the listing agreement, which becomes problematic because the property is already under contract. So how are you listing property already under contract? And no, getting a power of attorney from the owner to the wholesaler does not solve the problem because you cannot use a power of attorney for your own good. And that's what these wholesalers are doing, is that they're using a power of attorney to list the property for them to increase their profit, not to increase the sales price for the seller. That is the absolute definition of self-dealing. So how can someone wholesale if you can't market the property? The answer is simply you can't. Wholesaling 100% depends on you being able to flip the property to somebody else. And the only way you can flip the property to somebody else is to market and advertise the property to another party. You see, the basic way wholesale deals are structured make it very easy for real estate commissioners and regulators to shut it down. And they are. So now let's spend a few minutes discussing what wholesaling is and what it is not, and exactly why it's under attack throughout this country. So in this episode today, what I'm going to do is talk about what is wholesaling, what are the negative issues with wholesaling that make it very susceptible to attack by real estate commissions, what the wholesalers have done to try to work around issues, and why all of those workarounds have simply failed to fix the issue and actually made things a lot worse. And then lastly, I'm also going to examine this new craze called novations and how it fails to address all of the issues that are also causing regulators heartburn. So let's start first with a little background on wholesaling. Wholesaling, believe it or not, has been around for decades, but it was simply known by a different name. Back in the 1990s, it was called flipping. And this was where Party A would contract with Party B, and then Party B would contract with Party C. So A to B, B to C. The closing from B to C, however, was done first, where the cash realized from that transaction, from the actual sale of the property, was then used to close the purchase from A to B. Essentially, the closings were done in reverse. You funded the purchase of A to B with a sale of B to C. Think of this as selling a car before you buy it. Today, they call this pass-through funding. The problem is this is highly illegal if any federal loan is involved. It violates federal law, particularly Title 18 of the U.S. Code. And who wants the federal government breathing down your neck for this? Back in the late 1990s, many real estate investors and some closing attorneys and title companies actually faced criminal charges for doing flips. And so they went away very quickly. The only way to do the flip legally back in the 90s was for Party B to purchase the house from A using his money and then sell it to C after closing with A. Since most investors had limited cash or didn't want to tie up their money, few of these transactions actually occurred. So with federal law enforcement at a fever pitch, real estate investment world was dormant for many years. Then investors started coming back into this marketplace because we had shows on HGTV talking about flips and how to do them legal. The law did not change as to flips, but they created new investment vehicles such as wholesaling to get around the law. The first vehicle I want to talk about is the wholesaling transaction, and many investors are still doing wholesaling. The wholesaling transaction is nothing more than a flip, mind you, but it's done through an assignment versus doing it through reverse funding or two deeds. So let me explain that. In wholesaling, Party A contracts with Party B. Once under contract, Party B then markets the property to the public. Once they find a buyer, instead of purchasing it from A and then selling it to C, they simply assign the contract to C and they get paid an assignment fee. So A now sells it to C instead of B, and B makes an assignment fee. Many of these are done wrong because most investors don't understand the assignment process. Party A would contract with Party B, and then B would contract with Party C using a contract instead of an assignment of contract. There should have been an assignment, not two contracts. Secondly, when the investors sign the contract, they would include terms not in the original contract, such as different closing dates, different amounts of earnest money, different sales prices, none of which the seller has ever agreed to. Sometimes they would do an assignment, put a new purchase price. Sometimes they would completely change all the terms of the deal. The proper way should have been to contract from A to B and then assign for a fee at the exact same purchase price to C. An assignment fee would be included on the settlement statement, so you would have a closing from A to C, but there would be an assignment fee paid to B. So what's the problem with all this? Well, let me give you five quick reasons, although there are much, many more. First of all, the end user C could only borrow money based on the original contract. They could not do it based on the assigned value. So if A to B was for $100,000 and then C was coming in essentially paying $125,000 by paying a $25,000 assignment fee, their contract was still for $100,000 and a lender would only loan on $100,000. So C would have to pay the assignment fee with cash, which is our second point. The end user has to pay cash for the assignment fee. But few of these buyers have the cash to buy the property with the assignment fee. Therefore, the seller could hardly get retail. The third problem was most of the sellers are extremely skeptical. When you start talking about wholesaling, there can be no transparency. And that's a big problem. You're essentially having to lie and obfuscate to the seller about what your intentions are, because if your seller knows what your intentions are, they'll just list it themselves. So a lot of what happens in wholesaling is we're not telling the seller what's going on because the wholesaler doesn't want the seller to know that we're going to make a lot of money on this transaction, money that the seller could actually make themselves. The fourth issue was there's a very short time constraint on these transactions because most of these wholesalers do 30-day contracts. So they have to find a buyer and have that buyer close within the original date of the contract. Well, that's unlikely to happen if the end user is going to borrow money. So essentially, the only person they can flip the property to through the assignment is going to be another investor who also has to make money, who also has to cram the prices down. So you see in this, the only way that wholesaling works is to constantly cram down the price the seller is getting so that the wholesaler can make money, so that the next person who's going to be the investor gets money as well. And lastly, but most importantly, many real estate commissions throughout this country are simply getting ticked off about the whole issue and are starting to issue cease and desist orders against wholesalers. We're seeing this here in South Carolina. Attend any real estate commission hearing, and you're likely to see a cease and desist order being issued against a wholesaler. So now let's take a look at the issues as seen by the real estate commissions. Many regulators believe that wholesaling is the unauthorized practice of real estate, and the assignment fee is akin to a real estate commission or fee. I tend to agree with this. For example, when you look at Party A contracts with Party B for $100,000 and then assigns it to Party C for a $25,000 assignment fee, does that assignment fee not look like a real estate commission? Thus, what we're seeing is that real estate commissions are issuing cease and desist orders to wholesalers for the illegal practice of real estate without a real estate license. So a lot of real estate commissions have not necessarily outright outlawed wholesaling, but state laws are allowing them to prohibit the very essential actions of the wholesaler. For example, the only person who can advertise or market a property for sale in South Carolina is the owner of the property or a licensed real estate agent. Advertising and marketing includes not only marketing on the multiple listing service, but it also includes marketing on social media or in a Facebook group of other investors. All of this violates state law, and it violates it not only in South Carolina, but most of the jurisdictions around the country. And because a contract party is not a property owner, this allows the regulators and the real estate commissions to file cease and desist orders against wholesalers. Now, some investors have argued that the contract interest, as I mentioned, is an equitable interest, and that an equitable interest creates the ownership interest in the property so that they can market their own property. They're only half right. Having an equitable ownership interest in the property does create an ownership interest in the property that does allow you to market the property. Unfortunately for these wholesalers, having a contract on the property is absolutely in no way creating an equitable ownership interest. Most of these people who argue this approach in their Facebook groups and whatnot, have absolutely no idea what they're talking about. They are not lawyers. They've never discussed this with an attorney. They've attended some class on wholesaling, and they've been told this, so they know all the answers. And those that are most vocal are typically those on the boards, on the Facebook groups and chat boards and all that. And they claim that this contract gives them an equitable interest in the property. It absolutely does not. So what is an equitable interest? An equitable ownership interest is a form of ownership or right to use that exists without the legal title to the property. So for example, maybe a spouse who is not on the title living in the house making payments toward the mortgage would have an equitable ownership interest. The contract to buy the house doesn't give you any rights to use and enjoy the property. And if you think I'm wrong, why not try asking that seller that you have under contract if you can use their house this weekend for a party and see what happens? Think about it. If you have an equitable interest, think about this. If signing a contract in and of itself creates that equitable interest, then every time a real estate contract falls through, every time we have a DFT, you would have to eliminate that equitable interest in the property. They don't just go away. Once you get an equitable interest in a property, it's there forever until it is handled. And so every time we have a contract, if you had an equitable interest, if it did not close, then you have to terminate the equitable interest. Well, how would you do that? You could only terminate an equitable interest through either signing a quitclaim deed or having some type of foreclosure action. That's never happened in South Carolina. So if we're going to argue that we have an equitable interest because we have an ownership interest in the property through a contract, then every single time a contract has fell through in South Carolina, we would still have equitable ownership interest in the property. And so pretty much every title would be messed up. You absolutely have no equitable interest. The bottom line here is this. In most cases, the marketing and advertising of property requires a real estate license. So exactly how can a wholesaler wholesale when they can't market the property? Answer is they can't. Now, at this point, wholesalers have figured out what they would just do is hire a real estate agent to list a property to try to get around this issue. Sure, it might cost them a real estate commission of 6%, but at least they're not going to run afoul of the law. Some investors even have gone as far as try to get their own real estate agent, but keep in mind here in South Carolina, it sounds easier than reality. In South Carolina, our pass rate is still like around 20% for real estate licenses. So that might help in a small fraction of these deals, but not in all. Many states require the property owner sign the listing agreement before the agent can advertise and sell the property. Now, in the case of a wholesaler, we've already established that a wholesaler is not an owner, so the actual property owner needs to sign the listing agreement. This is fraught with numerous practical and legal issues for the real estate agents as well. First, a real estate agent is going to have to deal with a seller who didn't want to list a property in the first place. That's why they sold it so cheap to a wholesaler. How do you convince the seller to now let you list the property? They could have listed themselves with you earlier and not paid this wholesaler or not allowed this wholesaler to make money off of their transaction. Plus, think of the shadiness factor. They didn't want to list it. That's why they entered in a contract with a wholesaler, and now it's being listed. And you're going to have to deal with the questions about that and how this is working. Next, what does your fiduciary duty look like? You have a fiduciary duty to your client. The wholesaler is not your client. The seller is going to be your client. So how do you do what's in the best interest of the seller, your actual client, when the wholesaler is the one driving this transaction? It sure looks to me like the only person of concern is going to be the wholesaler, because that's the person who's hiring you to do all these deals. Good luck with that at a real estate commission hearing, because your fiduciary duty will always belong to your client, and the wholesaler cannot be your client in this transaction. But even more, how does these house showings exactly work? Who gets a contract offer? Who's going to accept the contract offer? Are you going to be negotiating this with the seller? Remember, the seller's already under contract, so we're going to have dual contracts, do we not? And what happens when the seller hears the better offer that's coming in? Are you not going to want to take the better offer as the seller? Are you going to say, well, that's fine, I'll go ahead and sign this offer even though it's going to pay the wholesaler a lot of money and not pay me anything? So the other workaround we've seen is that the investors don't want you to tell the seller what's going on. So what they will try to do is get a power of attorney from the seller so they can list the property on behalf of the seller so that you're never talking to the seller. Unfortunately for them, real estate agent law doesn't work that way. You as the agent nor the wholesaler can violate state law because somebody gives you permission. The seller still has to sign the listing agreement. Now, they're signing it through a power of attorney, but this is going to violate most, if not all, common laws of the principal agency rules. A person acting as a power of attorney cannot act for their own good. It's called self-dealing. When you list a property for the seller so that you can get a bigger payday that theoretically belongs to the seller, this violates all the laws of agency and makes you 100% susceptible to a lawsuit. I cannot think of a better example of self-dealing than this transaction. Exactly how are you going to list property for sale for more money than the seller's contract and claim that this is actually good for the seller? Using this POA breaches all kind of legal matters, all kind of fiduciary duties, and it absolutely will subject you to a lawsuit. And again, we have to still deal with this issue of how are you actually listing property that is already under contract? It is specifically against the law to have dual contracts. Will this not result in dual contracts? Let me quickly tell you about a case in South Carolina where a wholesaler contracted with the owner to purchase property. The listing agent listed the property in the multiple listing and sold the property to a third party. And at closing occurred, the seller didn't see the buyer side of the transaction and didn't see how much money they made on this flip. Months later, the seller did find out that the wholesaler made $30,000 through an assignment. So the seller then filed a grievance with the real estate commission against the real estate agent. The commission in South Carolina found that the agent did not have a signed listing agreement with the property owner, and they actually disciplined that real estate agent. So in this case, let's assume that the real estate agent did get the seller to sign the listing agreement. Did that fix all the issues? Absolutely not. Again, who is the real estate agent's client at this point? The listing agreement is with the seller and the agent. The wholesaler is not an owner of the property and is not a part to this listing agreement. So the fiduciary duty was owed to the property owner, the one who filed the grievance. Those duties would include fair dealing, good faith, and so forth. Is it fair dealing to sell the property for more than the contract that's already existing and give the profit to a third party instead of the seller? It also means that all communications are going to the seller and not the wholesaler. This is hardly an ideal situation for you as a real estate agent when the wholesaler doesn't even want the seller to know what the profit is. And again, what exactly is the agent presenting to the seller? Another contract? What happens if the seller says yes to this higher contract? Again, we're back into this dual contract issue, which is outlawed in South Carolina. As I stated earlier, some wholesalers have gone as far as becoming real estate agents themselves to try to avoid these issues, but that's not a big help. In South Carolina, real estate agents owe a duty of good faith and fair dealing to customers and clients, even if they never become clients and always remain as customers. And an agent can only act as an agent sometimes and claim that I was not acting as an agent other times. In real estate, you're always a real estate agent when you're licensed, even in your private real estate deals. So how do you think the commission is going to view a consumer contracting to sell the house to you for $100K and then 15 minutes later you are marketing or even contracting to sell that property for $125? I would say that's not going to look too good for you. So by being an agent, you get this heightened duty and it actually makes wholesaling harder for you. And remember, the seller in this situation is in fact a customer because you've had a real estate interaction with them. Lastly, the final argument you see from commissions is even if none of this other stuff existed, it sure is a net listing. Absolutely. A net listing is where a real estate agent guarantees a certain amount of money for the seller with the agent getting the remainder of the commission. For example, as an agent, I guarantee you $100,000 from the sale of this property, and if I sell it for a dollar more, then that's my commission. If I sell it for $10,000 more, that's my commission. That's illegal in South Carolina. That's exactly what wholesaling looks like, does it not? So this brings us to the latest fix, novations. Novations have started going crazy recently. It's replacing wholesaler. Wholesalers have been paying thousands of dollars to learn the whole world of novation, and their mistaken belief that it's going to resolve all of their problems that are at issue with wholesaling, but it simply does not. Novations are quite a different tool. What a novation is, it is basically an amendment to a contract that replaces the sales price and the buyer. So you'll have a contract between A and B, then you novate it to C, changing the buyer's name and changing the sales price. In the past, we've mainly seen novations in mortgages where you could substitute a provision like a prepayment penalty out with a no prepayment penalty. In my 28 years of doing real estate closings, and I've done about 30,000 closings in that time frame, and my law firms have closed well over hundreds of thousands of transactions. I've never seen an ovation in a real estate deal ever. So how it gets done in the wholesaling world is that party A is going to contract with party B, who then novates it to C. In essence, B is replaced by C. The price is adjusted, and any other terms that they want are also adjusted. And somehow in this transaction, they're going to pay fee to B. And why this is important, because in traditional wholesaling, party A sells to B, who assigns it to C. The lender's only going to lend on the contract value of A to B, and the end user C has to pay the assignment fee in cash. So $100,000 contracts assigned for $25,000. The end user must pay the $25,000 in cash, plus any down payment on the $100,000, plus all the closing costs, and that eats up all the cash and limits really the number of parties that can buy the property. But by doing the novation, it changes the parties and the amount, so now that the lender will actually loan on the new contract amount, because we have basically an amendment where the contract is no longer $100,000, is now $125,000. But this is a big assumption. This assumes that the lender, the closing attorney, the title insurance companies, the real estate agents, and the sellers understand what novations are. And not all underwriters are going to go for this. So now what? But if all of these parties do understand what a novation is, the contract price becomes $125,000 and the new loan will be based on $125,000 sales price, with the investor no longer being part of the transaction. But if the investor is no longer part of the transaction, how exactly are we guaranteeing the investor getting paid the $25,000 in the deal? I'm not sure how they do. So let's look at some of the issues here. Well, it certainly seems shady to the closing attorney, title company, title insurance agencies, as well as the real estate agents. I watched a seminar the other day on novations, and the very next day, an attorney in my office who has over 25 years experience handed to me the novation and said, "This sure looks very shady. Do you not agree?" And I looked at it and I kind of laughed. I was like, "Yeah, I just saw what this was." My point being is, if 25-year veteran lawyer thinks this is shady, what do you think other real estate agents are going to think of this transaction? How do you convince a real estate agent that this is all on the up and up when you try to get them to sign a novation agreement instead of a contract offer? Remember, novations are not structurally different than how people are doing wholesaling. There's still a contract between A and B is still not the owner of the property, and you still can't accept a second contract. So what you're going to have to do is ask other real estate agents not to submit you an offer of contract, but to submit you an offer on a novation form. You can't accept the other contract because that's going to give you dual contracts. So how would you even note this in the multiple listing service, and how are you going to convince an agent not to send the contract? How are you going to get them to understand what these convoluted novation documents are? I'll tell you, it's just not going to happen. Plus, you're probably violating state law because you're accepting multiple contracts on the property. And how are you going to market this novation? You still don't own anything. It hasn't changed that. You still have no ownership. You still have only a contract issue interest. And so you can't market a novation any more than you can market a wholesale deal. That's the biggest problem. A licensed agent can't market property without getting the property listing signed by the owner. Good luck with that and explaining novations to an owner. The more you discuss this concept with the seller, the shadier it's going to seem. And in order to make wholesaling attractive to the seller, it must be simple. The more complicated it gets, the more likely they're just going to hire their agent and do it themselves. So I'm not sure how you as an agent or as an investor get this listing agreement signed. Lastly, what exactly are we marketing again? You're not marketing the property, you're marketing the contract. But I think the biggest issue here is, how does this novator, we'll call him, get paid? If a novation, A sells to B, B then novates to C, the novation simply changes the price and the name of the buyer. So now the only contract is between A and C, with B being completely out of the transaction. So how is B getting paid? The answer is, they have to sign some other document setting out their fee. The problem is, that certainly looks like a real estate commission. So if they're unlicensed, they're getting paid a real estate commission. If you're licensed, you're getting paid without having a listing agreement signed. Either way, this is not going to go well for you. So what is the bottom line? Bottom line is this. Wholesaling is essentially dead in South Carolina. You cannot wholesale. I'll go ahead and say it. You cannot market and advertise property. You don't have a listing. You cannot market and advertise property if you're not a real estate licensee. So essentially, wholesaling is dead. And novations do not do anything to fix the problem. Novations are exactly like wholesaling. You're still marketing and advertising property that you do not have a listing agreement on, or either you're not a real estate agent. And if you're a real estate agent, you're breaching all kinds of fiduciary duties. So absolutely, you cannot wholesale, nor can you novate. And no, It does not create an equitable interest in the property by having a contract on the property. That is an absolute incorrect legal statement. And getting a power of attorney signed from the seller to the wholesaler is going to be an absolute breach of fiduciary duties between the principal and the agent, and it absolutely is self-dealing. It is going to set everybody in the transaction up for a massive lawsuit. So none of this works. Yet, we still have wholesalers and novators all over South Carolina continuing to do this. So next week, I am going to discuss a solution. A solution is going to be available to you as an investor. So if you want to be a real estate agent taking the advice of Matt Cavanaugh and start investing, this solution will be available to you. It's also a solution that will be available to other parties that might want to do investing and hire real estate agents. It's going to allow them to hire legally you as a real estate licensee and legally allow you to market and advertise the property for sale. It's going to be legal and it's going to be ethical, but the most important part of this is that the transactions will be drafted in an interest that is best for the seller and not just in the best interest of the real estate investor. It's going to be a partnership between you and the investors, which will benefit all parties involved. So stay tuned next week for our solution. So that's all the time I have for our show today. I'd like to thank you all for tuning in. Please like us, share us, and subscribe. Don't forget to tell other real estate agents all about Dish and Dirt. Y'all have a great weekend. See you again next week.